Welcome to another episode of Trafford Talk. I'm Ollie, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Marty.
Hello.
All right. First, let's talk about the Southampton game. United beat Southampton 3-2 at Old Trafford, and it was a really, really good game. I don't know about you, but I was pretty much on the edge of my seat the entire time. But, you know, it was a lot harder than it had to be, I thought, but at the same time, it was really entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch the full game, but from what I've seen on Match of the Day, yeah, it did look like a really riveting game.
Yeah.
With amazing goals, I must add.
Yeah, the goals were, I mean, it was strange because it was like the players were having their own goal of the month competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, we started an all academy graduate midfield, which is it's nice to see, but I just think, what does that say about how much faith Ollie has in Fred? Because that technically, like, if you think about it, two out of our normal three midfielders were injured, right? And then McTominay and Pereira came in alongside Pogba. So that technically makes Fred sixth choice, which is kind of like, it's kind of crazy to think about. So, like, what do you think about that? Do you think Fred's kind of a bit of a goner, or do you think he's just not found his feet yet, but he needs time?
I think there's no chance he goes in the summer. Like, I don't think there's any chance he goes in the summer. I think Ollie will give him he had a good pre-season as well, didn't he? So I don't really understand that one. But actually, no, I don't remember. Did he come, like, at the end of the window? I actually don't even remember the last window.
Because it was at the World Cup. It was the World Cup one, wasn't it? So it was after the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think
he was
quite late to pre-season, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't even think he might not even had a pre-season. If he did, he might have played one game. I don't really remember.
Mm.
But either way, I think Ollie would try to give him that full pre-season, you know, like start the season off like well. And I think Ollie will try his best, because like we can't forget he cost £55 million. And even though I know people will say if the player doesn't fit the system or if the manager doesn't fancy him, like there's no point in trying to force it. But I think Ollie will try his best to see what he can do about the Fred situation. And if a year from now, it still isn't working, I think then we may look to move him on. But I think Ollie will give him a good chance.
Yeah, I guess. The thing is that, like, if you've bought a midfielder for over £50 million, one, you'd ideally like him to be into your starting 11, go into your best team. But then two, have, you know, not even one, but two players out, and he doesn't start. It's just like... It's bizarre, but
yeah.
I do agree that I don't think we'll move him on in the summer. I think I'll have at least one more season to prove himself. And, you know, you never know, next season he might prove his worth and kind of find his feet in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think the issue with Fred is that he was kind of bought for his blend of technique and his physical attributes. He's not like a big guy, but he's quite tenacious and he has a lot of stamina, and he hasn't really shown either side of his game. Like, he hasn't shown any of his technical ability. Like, for Shakhtar in the Champions League especially, and against City, for example, like his passing between the lines and his crazy free kick he scored against them, like, we haven't seen anywhere near that level of performance from him in the United shirt, like, at all.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of frustrating, isn't it? And I mean, if you think about it, we kind of had the same issue with Sanchez. We've seen the performances he's offered for Arsenal, and we, you know, when we bought him, we thought we'd have, you know, we'd see some of that at the club, but he's just been nowhere near up to scratch. And I think it's a similar kind of problem, but I think it's less forgiving because he was in the Premier League, he was in the same league. It's not much of a shift in culture or climate or style of play or opposition or anything. It's like, it's bizarre because when Dalot came on, he got subbed on for Sanchez around the 60th minute, and he changed the game. He literally created two chances in 2 minutes and got an assist.
Yeah.
Like, it just shows that Dalot offered more than anything Alexis had during 50 minutes in his 2 minutes of coming on, which I think says it all.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've discussed the Alexis conundrum quite a lot. And like, as you said, like, Alexis didn't do much in 50 minutes, and Dalot comes on, provides an assist, creates big chances. I mean, when a fullback, a 19-year-old fullback, is doing more than you've done in 50 whole minutes, I mean, I think there's a bit of trouble there, if you ask me.
Yeah, I know, especially since, you know, he completed 100% of his take-ons, he got a couple of shots, a few key passes, obviously got an assist. Like, it shows that even offensively, Dalot's coming on and offering more than Sanchez, and he's a right back, which is just, I don't know, it's weird to see. It's not ideal, is it?
I think the wider issue with Sanchez is I don't see him leaving in the summer. I honestly don't, because the amount of money he's making at United, and I don't know, like, there's who will be able to match his wage? The only place that would want to do that is China, like a team in China. And I just don't see him. I don't think, like, I think he's quite like in a disillusioned state where he doesn't think that he's that bad, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So you probably think he's above playing in China. And because of that, he'll probably stick around for like another year.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I think it's just how to cut our losses, isn't it? Yeah, anyway, moving on from Sanchez, let's talk about Andres Pereira for a second. Because for me, he was my man of the match. He had an absolutely unbelievable performance. And it seemed that he was playing further forward, because I know under Mourinho, the few chances he did get, he played as like a number six. But he seemed to be playing like as a bit of a number eight, drifting forward in that kind of position. And he had a phenomenal game, I thought. He had nearly 80% pass accuracy, 11 final third passes, 6 ball recoveries, 2 interceptions, and he got a goal and an assist. You know, it was his first Premier League goal, and it was an absolute rocket from outside the box. It was a phenomenal effort, but I think he just played so well, and he's struggled this season, and I think he kind of came into his own in the Southampton game, and he looked phenomenal.
Yeah. Thing with Andreas is, I think he's extremely talented. Like, I think he's one of the most talented players that's come out of our academy in recent history. But, I mean, he has, like, Mourinho, like, sort of just put him in CDM because, you know, he's a technical player. So Mourinho figured, okay, he could probably do a job there. But, like, because of his attributes that he has, I think it's quite obvious that he'd be better suited in a more attacking position. So I honestly think it's a sort of no-brainer to play him either as an eight, like a progressive eight or a number 10. So, I mean, we sort of saw that against Southampton, and I'm not surprised that he had a good game.
Yeah, it was a really good performance. I think he needs it because I think he was definitely low on confidence. I think we could all see that. So it's good for him. Hopefully he could take that. That will give him some confidence for a while, because I feel like maybe he is a bit of a confidence-based player. Under Mourinho, he wasn't playing well, and he wasn't really getting many opportunities. And he kind of just seemed, if you looked at him on the bench, he just kind of looked sad, which, you know, I don't know if that's just his face, but like, do you know what I mean? He did look a bit dejected, but now he's smiling. He's feeling good probably after that game. I mean, I say probably. He's definitely feeling good after that game. Hopefully, if he has to play in any upcoming games due to our injuries, he'll definitely carry that on.
I think Fred will play on Wednesday, and Andreas will play against Arsenal. That's my guess.
Yeah, I mean, could be. We'll see.
Also, I know Rashford had a couple good free kicks at the beginning of the season, or at the beginning of Ollie's start as a manager, but I think Andreas should be on free kicks, because if you remember in the pre-season when he scored that banger of a free kick,
yeah,
like, I don't understand how he's not on free kicks if he's playing. I think, especially, look at the shot that he had. It was basically like a dead ball position, and he banged it in the top corner. So why not just give him free kicks from close range?
Yeah, I know. I do hear what you're saying, but Rashford can make it sweetly as well. But I feel like Rashford's technique is a bit more like Ronaldo's. It's a bit like just further out. It suits him nicely. But Pereira's has definitely got that finesse to kind of bend it in, as we saw with his goal. I mean, speaking of free kicks, James Ward-Prowse scored an absolutely unbelievable free kick for Southampton's second goal.
No one's saving that.
Yeah, I mean, De Gea couldn't believe it, and neither could I, to be honest with you. Like, it was inch perfect. It was, yeah, as you said, no one was saving that. It was an incredible free kick. Let's move on to Lukaku, because, yeah, it's definitely been a bit of a controversial topic, I mean, on the podcast and also among other United fans. I felt he had a game of two halves, basically, because in the first half, I felt he was really frustrating. He kept missing key opportunities. Like, for example, one was in the first 5 minutes when he was in, like, the six-yard box, and he had it on his left foot, and he could have put it either side of the keeper, and he just kind of toe-poked it towards the keeper, and the keeper had an easy save. I thought he should have definitely done better there. Also, there was another one after a goal down, and Pereira ripped in an absolute beauty. He pretty much put it on the plate for him, and it was like a free header, and it was just a pathetic attempt from Lukaku. He just kind of glanced at it, and it was just kind of went wide, and it's like that. You should be scoring those. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's two goals he should have had in the first half. But but then also, he had a really good game by, like, come full-time, because obviously he scored two goals. He had a couple of successful take-ons, a couple of good crosses. He won some aerial duels, and he kind of just scored when we needed him. Yeah, but I thought he had a game of two halves, because he scored our last two goals, and they were actually really good finishes. I feel the two opportunities that he missed in the first half were a lot easier than the ones he put away. Like, his first goal, he was kind of getting closed down. He kind of bent it with his right foot around, like, a few defenders into the bottom right-hand corner. And I was thinking, bloody hell, like, you don't expect him to score those when he's missing easy opportunities and tap-ins. And then also from the winner where he scored, it was kind of same situation. Right foot, bottom corner. And it was a great finish. So he actually played well overall, but inconsistent throughout the game, I felt.
The thing with Lukaku, for me, is that he scores harder chances. Like, he'll have like a simple chance to miss it and score a much, much more difficult chance like 10 minutes later. Like, he's just a weird guy, honestly.
Yeah, I know.
I think he's one of those players, even though he's been a striker for many years, obviously, and he scored a lot of goals, I feel like he thinks too much sometimes.
No, I agree. I think sometimes he does little step overs and stuff when he just really needs to play it simple, and it kind of hinders hinders the attack, really. But weirdly enough, he scored as many Premier League goals as Eden Hazard and Raheem Sterling this season, because he scored... Yeah. He scored 4 goals in 2 games now for us. So he's hitting a bit of a form, which is good, because when Rashford's been a bit injured, so, and obviously Rashford is other main striker kind of competition. When one's not scoring and the other striker is scoring, that's only a good thing, really.
Yeah, it is. And I think Ollie has a bit of a good problem now with these two, because I think it's clear that Rashford is his more favoured striker. But now with Rom firing as he is, I think it'd be unfair if Ollie just completely drops him. It's a positive and a negative sort of, because now Ollie might feel like he has to play Lukaku, but he's in a decent run of form right now. And if he does have to shoehorn him into the team, it might hinder the squad. So we don't actually know how it will work. It's like, it's possible that Rashford comes in and then he plays on the left. And we all know how I feel about Rashford on the left. I don't think he's as effective as he is on the left as he is up front. And if that's not the case and Rashford's up front and Lukaku's on the right, then it's exactly the same situation. Lukaku is a much better striker than he is a right winger. Or if we do 2 up front, I honestly don't think they're that comfortable playing together in a 2. So yeah, it's a bit of a weird conundrum how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I know. And also with Lukaku, strangely, he seems to be scoring more with his weak foot than his supposed strong foot.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. It's a bit weird.
Very strange. I don't know why that is. Maybe Lukaku's got a better right foot than even he thinks.
Maybe he hasn't known this whole time he's actually right footed.
That would actually make a lot of sense, because he does bottle a lot for the left.
It would.
Also, I think it's worth mentioning that I think he looked a bit slimmer. He's looked a bit slimmer recently. In the Southampton game, I feel like he looked slimmer than he did normally, because, I don't know, like, maybe do you think there's a change in diet or what that maybe, like, is positively impacting his performances for us on the pitch?
I don't know to what lengths, like, Ollie's gone in terms of, like, how he wants to mold Lukaku. I don't know if he's told him, like, he needs to drop pounds or whatever, but
yeah,
you are right. He does seem a bit leaner, but I honestly couldn't tell you like what the reasoning behind that is. It could just be that, I don't know, he's under less stress now. Who knows? It could be anything as small as that. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. Also, I'd like to quickly mention that for Southampton's first goal, which was an absolute rocket from Valerie, but I think personally, Dave should have done better with that.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I think he knows that as well, because he did look disappointed with himself after he conceded. He was shaking his head and that, like, after the ball went in. So yeah, I think from that distance, getting beat at your near post, like, was, you know, not ideal, but we won in the end. So, and let's face it, Dave, although he's the best keeper in the world, he is human. He's prone to a mistake here or there. He doesn't make them that often, so at least it didn't really impact us in terms of points.
Yeah. And the thing with that goal is that I don't think he expected it. That's why he didn't save it.
Yeah.
Like, but the thing with Dave is that he's usually so alert. Like, he expects anything. But it honestly seemed like he was just, like, a step away from saving that. You know what I mean? He got his fingertips to it, but he just wasn't there. Like, if he was paying a bit more attention, if he was more alert, I think he would have saved it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because I think, especially the beginning of the game, we were really attacking Southampton. He didn't really have much to do. And it's not really an excuse saying that was, like, one of the first shots he faced or whatever. But, like, I don't think anyone expected their bloody right back to bag an absolute rocket top bins.
Yeah, exactly.
Also in the Southampton game, Tai Chong became the latest academy graduate to play in the Premier League for United. That's 2 academy debuts in 2 Premier League games.
Yeah. So it's the way it should be.
Yeah, it's nice. It's really good to see. And I think that shows just that it's just like another reason why to keep Ollie. He's obviously following the DNA and the traditions of the club of, you know, promoting the youth and giving them chances. Obviously, Chong only came on for the last couple of minutes and didn't really have much. But, I mean, you've got to start somewhere. You can't expect to be an academy graduate, never played in the Premier League before, start a game and play 90 minutes. It's not going to happen, is it? It's just not realistic.
Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day where, I don't know if this is just like me, because I'm a United fan now, I think this way. But when I think about other teams, maybe I'm not clued in as much, but I feel like United and maybe City are the only 2 teams that have like sort of recognisable young talent that people are aware of, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
Like, and then, like, when you think about other teams like Arsenal, like, honestly, like, think about it. Who do Arsenal have that are young talents that people are aware of? I couldn't name one. Maybe Reece Nelson, but he doesn't even play for the club.
They've got that that Big Tech Chong with the long hair that Fellaini pulled.
Wait, who? Oh, Guendouzi, but they bought him though. So I mean,
oh, did they?
Yeah, they bought.
Didn't realize they bought him. Not gonna lie. Well, there you go then.
So I mean, like City, they have Foden and
Foden. Yeah, I'd say Foden's probably the other, like, that's kind of like the one really I can think of.
Yeah, we have like Chong, Gomez, Greenwood, like everyone, like not United fans know these guys. Like people in the, like, that watch the Premier League know these players, even though they haven't actually played in the Premier League much. But like other clubs, like, I couldn't tell you like any other like rising stars from any other clubs.
No, I agree. I mean, everyone who kind of rises at Liverpool, they just bloody sell, don't they?
Yeah, that guy, Rian Brewster, whatever his name is, that's the only guy I know of.
I mean, I guess Sterling is one that's come through the ranks, come through the academy, and has proven himself to be a really good player. But I feel like, obviously, at the moment now, he's just widely considered a good player. He's not like an up and coming guy anymore, obviously. So
yeah, he's about to hit 25. So
yeah, I guess. Overall, I think the Southampton game was a really entertaining game. Scoring first, going 2-1 down, and coming back to win 3-2 with a 90th minute winner. You really can't complain with that performance. And also, I'd like to say, you know, Pogba didn't have the best game of his career, but he didn't really need to. He was kind of doing a lot of the dirty work. Do you know what I mean? Tracking back, winning the ball back. He didn't really get on the score sheet or anything, which he should have done, by the way, because obviously he had that 92nd minute penalty, and he did that bloody stupid run-up. I mean, the thing is with Pogba's run-up is, if you're going to do the stupid run-up, you need to put it in the back of the net. And he didn't put it in the back of the net, and then he just looks like an absolute mug.
Yeah, I think the keeper got lucky, though, I'm not going to lie.
I think it was a weak penalty. That penalty was weak. It was right down the middle of the goal. It was like, if you're going to go right down the middle of the goal, you need to be powerful. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I just think it was a weak penalty. And, you know, I don't know if Ollie's going to get into his ear and say, look, you need to cut out these run-ups or what. But I feel like that run-up, he did it for, like, obviously not as long as the first time he did it, but he did it for longer than he's done it recently. Recently, he's just done, like, two or three steps of like that, and then he runs up properly and done it. But he pretty much did it. Do you know what I mean? He took, like, a one-step penalty, and it was crap. So
yeah. I saw post-match, Ollie said that he's taking the next one no matter what.
Who is?
Ollie said to Pogba already that he's taking the next one, so get ready.
Right, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's one thing you've got to do. Like, make sure he doesn't drop his confidence and tell him that he's all right. But they would, like, I do agree what you said with Pogba about doing the dirty work and stuff like that. I think now he realises that he is the most experienced midfielder that we have.
Yeah.
So he understands that he has more responsibility now. And it's obvious. I mean, against Palace, it was pretty much the same thing. He was doing all the dirty work. And he has a lot of tracking back. Like, when Matic and Herrera were playing, like, you didn't really see Pogba running back that often, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
But now you see Pogba chasing back as much as he can, covering McTominay. Like, you'd sometimes in the game against Southampton, you'd see McTominay more advanced than Pogba. Like, it was a bit strange. You've seen, like, another side to Pogba's game. A side that he's been criticised for over the past year or so, over the past 2 years. But, you know, he has to, when he has to do it, he'll do it. But it's just that you shouldn't need to force him to do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what was happening under Mourinho, and that's why he went sour. He was getting forced to do something he didn't want to do.
Yeah.
But now he's fighting for the cause. Like, he's bought into the cause, so he wants to do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think also, as you said, him being the most experienced player in the midfield with obviously two young academy graduates there, he's got to take more responsibility and do more of the dirty work, which he did. So fair play to him. That win sees us go fourth in the Premier League, 1 point ahead of Arsenal, and interestingly, only 3 points behind Tottenham.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about, because they were 10 points ahead of us a couple of weeks, like, was it even 2 weeks ago? Something like that? I don't think it was that long ago, but obviously Tottenham, in their last three, they've lost two and drawn one. So, yeah, we've caught up on them big time, which is good.
I remember a message James sent us quite a while ago saying how we'd never catch Spurs or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably sweating now.
No, he's sweating. If they lose next game and we win, there we go. We're level on points, so.
Yeah. Honestly, I the scenario where we finish above them isn't that unbelievable, yeah?
Well, I think I read somewhere that Ollie's actually targeting top three finish.
Yeah, as we should be. I mean, if we go unbeaten, like, the rest of the season, we could be, like, far away from fourth, as in third, but, like, extremely far away from fourth.
Yeah, we'd get some distance between us and the rest of the pack chasing fourth, I think.
Yeah.
It would be
Chelsea had a shaky game today against Fulham. If they play like that for the rest of the season, I mean, I wouldn't even be worried about Chelsea, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Arsenal played Tottenham, and, you know, Arsenal's strikers were absolutely bottling things left, right and centre. Lacazette missing sitters, and Aubameyang missing a penalty in the North London Derby. You know, these guys are practicing dances in training the day before. Like, these guys should be practicing their finishing. But Arsenal are bottlers, Tottenham are bottlers, Chelsea are so inconsistent this season, it boggles the mind. So I think really top four is guaranteed. Not guaranteed. Of course it's not guaranteed. Top four is looking likely, but third would be a good little bar to set ourselves, wouldn't it?
Yeah. We cannot lose to Arsenal. That cannot happen. If that happens, that just makes our job a lot harder, honestly.
Yeah, I know. That would be awful. But
minimum a draw at the Emirates. Honestly, minimum.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see what players are back and see what we can do. I mean,
yeah.
Make sure to tune in to our next episode, which will be later on this week, actually. I know we normally do one a week, but it's a crazy schedule. So we'll actually preview the Arsenal game later on in the week. So make sure to tune in for that. Right, it's time to move on to news/general talk. And a couple of things going on in the world of Manchester United this week. We didn't trigger Valencia's 1-year extension in his contract. So it seems that he's set to leave United at the end of the season. You know, he tweeted that, you know, when he was living in his humble town in Ecuador, he never imagined he'd travel to Europe, and he never imagined that he'd play 10 years in the best club in the world. You know, it's nice that he's focused on recovering so he can actually end the season playing at Old Trafford and kind of have a farewell. And I don't know about you personally, I feel it's the right time to go, but I kind of feel sad as well because he's been with us for 10 years. And so for the last 10 years, I've kind of grown up watching him play for the club, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and he's been a brilliant servant to the club, so yeah, I wish him all the best, really.
Yeah, I do totally agree with you. I think it is the right time to leave. This is one time where I think United didn't do the stupid thing, which would have been to offer him a new deal. I think we did that with Ashley Young. I mean, I don't think we should offer Ashley Young a new deal. I know we've already spoken about this, but I think both Ashley Young and Antonio Valencia are in the same sort of boat. I know Ashley Young is a lot more reliable because he isn't as injured as much, but I think that those two should have been moved on. And I know that Valencia has been here for 10 years and he would have got his testimonial next year or whatever. And we could have easily offered him a year, give him his testimonial, then he could go or whatever. But I mean, I'm glad we've done the ruthless thing here and moved him on, because now obviously we can get money off the wage bill and we can look into bedding in the new right back, the low, or another right back that we may buy.
Yeah, I agree with you. Probably the smart thing, it's probably for the best. Obviously, he's getting quite injury prone now, going into his early 30s and stuff. So, really the right time for me. But also, there's a lot of sentiment, you know. I remember when he was running down the wing in the, 2014 season, when he made that incredible run against Liverpool, when he sprinted and there was two Liverpool players, like, running to the ball and they were a lot closer to him, and he ran from, like, you know, our box up and he ran, like, 80 yards and put a cross in and stuff. And it's incredible to see. Obviously, he was player of the year that year, I think. So, you know, he's been a model of consistency for us, especially in his earlier days under Sir Alex.
Yeah, I think that was the year before he got the number 7, right?
It was his best year for the club, and then he got the number 7. He didn't really do too well, so he went back to 25. But hey-ho.
Yeah.
There's also news that United have been offered Icardi in a swap deal for Lukaku. Apparently, The Express suggests that Inter are looking to offload the Argentine forward, which is quite clear, seeing as they stripped him from captaincy and stuff like that at the end of the season, and could offer him to United in order to secure the services of Lukaku. So,
right.
Recently, obviously, Lukaku's kind of picked up form, but what would you say to this? Would you want to do the swap deal or no?
Would I want to do it? I think it's a harder question than a yes or no, because if we get Icardi, that's by to Rashford at number 9, because Icardi will be the only number 9.
Yeah.
And if we say no, it's sort of a good thing, because you have Lukaku, who's a more versatile number 9, who can play, he can play right wing, or he can, he can play in more positions. And then you have Rashford as a number 9, and that works. And I don't... Honestly, it seems like Lukaku doesn't necessarily mind being sort of second fiddle yet anyway. We haven't really seen him be frustrated yet. So, I mean, if we were to do that and we just traded him straight, that would be the end of Rashford as a number 9, and I wouldn't want that. And for that reason, I'm going to say no.
That's interesting, because, I mean, we all know how you feel about Lukaku, and I thought you'd be jumping on that. Seeing as a couple of weeks ago, we were like, we need to swap Lukaku for Icardi, get Icardi up front. But seeing as Rashford is now seeming to be the main man up top. And you know what? It's interesting because Lukaku is now United's second highest scorer since the Solskjaer appointment. 7 goals and 14 appearances. It's not too bad for a backup striker, is it really?
Yeah, no. And if he doesn't mind playing that way, I mean, I'd keep him. But honestly, I think if this happens for another whole season, he'll look to move on himself. Like, I don't think we might even want to keep him, but I think he'd want to move on because of his pride or whatever.
No, I guess. But I think, if you think about being the second choice striker for United, I think in the position Lukaku's in, if he kind of accepts, you know, Rashford's the main striker, it's not really too bad for him if you think about it, because one, as you said, he's flexible. So if one or two players get injured from the starting 11, he can slot in right wing. He can play through the middle. Rashford can then drift out to left or go on the right or whatever. Do you know what I mean? There is some room for movement. And, you know, you never know. Him and Rashford could start up top with, you know, Lingard or someone in behind, and they could actually form a decent little partnership. Definitely there was some flashes of that in the Southampton games. There were some nice little glances of play with Lukaku doing some one-touch football in the penalty area, which was really bizarre to see. But, you know, so it seems like they could have some chemistry going forward. And, you know, there are obviously FA Cup games and League Cup games and Champions League games. And there are a lot of competitions. And you're not going to start one team for the entire, for every game. So, you know, if you look at, like, it in terms of rotation and flexibility, he could still get a fair few games and goals for United going forward.
Yeah. I do not think we'll address the number nine position. I think that's done and dusted. We have far too much cover for that position to even consider getting another number nine. But yeah, I would say the only number nine that I would even consider is the second coming of RVP, the AC Milan striker, Piontek. That guy is next level.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think we'll add another number nine, but I think if we are to lose one, like if we're to lose Lukaku, then we'll obviously get another one.
Yeah, but I think we'll get like a striker that's okay with playing second fiddle. I don't think we'll get a ready-made star as a striker, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, fair enough. In other news, United are supposedly readying a $155 million double transfer bid to Benfica in order to secure the duo of Ruben Dias and João Felix at the end of the season. And I'm not going to lie, I just don't see this happening. But what are your thoughts on it?
Firstly, it's not going to happen. I agree with you with that. Secondly, João Felix is probably going to Wolves, so that's done and dusted.
Portuguese connection.
But I don't even understand how Wolves are going to find 90 million to pay for the guy, but that's one for Jorge Mendes to deal with, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, we're not the type of club. Firstly, raid another club. I don't think, we don't do that kind of thing. We don't just take two of their like rising star. We're not going to do something like that. Firstly, we wouldn't pay 155 million, firstly. That's the main issue.
Yeah.
And secondly, that they don't address our problem areas. I mean, Ruben Dias kind of does because he's a centre-back, but João Felix is either a centre-forward or a left-winger. He's not even a right-winger. So there's literally no point of that. So that's why I think that makes no sense. Unless we're getting rid of Mata, getting rid of somebody else, then that would make sense. But other than that, it doesn't make sense.
No, I agree. I think especially for that money, you'd be wanting two first-team starters, not young prospects. Do you know what I mean? I think we've got enough young centre-backs as well. Obviously, we need an experienced centre-back who's at the top of his game now, really, to come in. And as he said, left-wing and up front, got more than enough cover, so probably not likely to happen. Right, it's time to move on to previewing the second leg in the Champions League, where we play Paris Saint-Germain. We're obviously playing away from home, so it could be a very tough game, especially seeing as Pogba, our only... Why I say that so weird? Pogba. Especially seeing as Pogba, who's one fit midfielder, who starts in our strongest 11, is out for the game, obviously picking up a red card at the end of the first leg. It's looking to be a tough game, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for being positive and all that, but our midfield is going to get absolutely roasted on Wednesday. That's all I know.
I don't know. Have faith. Pereira is looking good now.
Yeah, he's looking good, but I mean, guy hasn't got anywhere near the experience or talent when comparing to a guy like Verratti.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely an uphill climb, but you know, as Sasha says after the end of the last game, mountains are made to be climbed. So you never know. It's only 2-0. And the thing about it is,
I mean, yeah,
I was going to say, the thing about it is we are away from home, right? So realistically, if we score 2 goals, then it's going to be tough for them.
And, well, yeah.
You know, stranger things have happened in football.
You know, yeah, nah, you're right. But I mean, if we're totally honest, they know they're leaving 2-0 and they're not going to let us come onto them that easily. And I think what's going to happen is I think we'll concede another one because I'm almost certain we'll play 4-2-3-1 and just throw caution to the wind and just go at them as much as we can, because there's no point of even trying to win that midfield battle because it's not going to happen. So just, honestly, I just load up the front and just go for it. That's what I'd do.
Well, I think you've kind of got to go for it at this point, don't you? I mean, clearly we've got a weaker midfield when we've got our starting 11, but seeing as our main three midfielders probably out, we're looking at a midfield of probably Fred, Pereira and McTominay, which is...
Yeah, that could not happen.
Let's face it, that's absolutely second team. That is just our second team midfield, realistically.
It blows my mind that we don't have DM cover. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's not ideal, is it?
How can there just be Matic? The guy, everyone knows Matic is dead before the season's over. I mean, like, the guy, how do we not have cover for the guy? I don't understand, honestly.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit scary, seeing as, you know, I mean, they've not lost a game since they played us as well. Obviously, they've won every single game because, you know, bit of a Mickey Mouse league, isn't it? Still averaging over 60% of possession, still averaging 3 goals a game. You know, it's the same old PSG. They're a lot further ahead than us in terms of their squad. Tactically, probably. Well, I say tactically. I think Tuchel's a tactician, and he's got more experience at a higher level than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has. Even though Solskjaer has shown his tactical nous against, you know, the likes of Arsenal or Chelsea, blah, 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 to win those types of games, I think Tuchel and PSG, the calibre of squad and the calibre of manager, it's a step up. It's another level, and I think it's maybe just a bit too high for us at this current stage.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know. Is Neymar Lannister even back?
He's such a dodgy geezer, isn't he? Feeling up his mum's ass, giving it a little spank.
Mate, I don't even know if he's back or not. If he's back, it's done. It's done deal.
No, I don't know. I mean, not gonna lie. Neymar against who? Ashley Young. Yeah, it's looking peak.
Ashley Young's definitely getting sent by that 30th minute.
I mean, you know. Other than the fact that he's not an assist, though, he's a bloody great footballer. So I hope he's not back. But you know, we'll see. Have you got a score prediction for the game?
Yeah, we'll lose 3-1.
That makes sense to at all, is it?
I mean, if you want me to be realistic, we lose 3-1. But you know, if I'm in dreamland, we win 3-0.
You know what? I think we'll draw 1-1. They don't need to win the game, obviously. I feel like we could go for it. We'll probably concede because we're going flooding forward. So we'll probably concede first. And then obviously we'll go for it more. We'll probably grab a goal and then try and push for another. But I think it'll be too little too late. And PSG will just control the midfield, control the ball, keep possession and kind of just wind it down, really.
I don't know about you, but I don't know. Obviously we want to win every single game, but I don't know how much they... I don't know. I don't know how to phrase this, but I don't know how much they... really not care, but I think if we lose, it's not like no one's gonna be like, oh, we lost. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we lost.
No, I know what you're saying, and realistically, if you think about like where the clubs are at, we've still got the FA Cup, we're still in the battle for top four, so I think our priorities lie elsewhere, and we should really focus on those things. I think we're not at a level yet that we're ready to compete for the Champions League. Obviously, we should be in the Champions League, but for PSG, their domestic league is guaranteed every season, and the Champions League is really the big thing for them. That's what they're pushing for, do you know what I mean? So, you know, they're as seeing as they're gunning for the PSG, and that's their main aim, their main target. And for us at this moment, obviously, we're in a bit of transition. Ollie's just come in, which is kind of trying to get ourselves stable for next season, really. Get Champions League football for next season. Top four, you know, maybe have a cup run. Seeing as we've already beaten, you know, Chelsea and Arsenal. We've got Wolves. City, the only other big team in the competition. We've got a real chance of winning that. So, you know, priorities lie elsewhere. But, you know, it'd be nice for a comeback.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to eat my words, honestly. I'd love that. But
yeah, of course.
Who knows, isn't it? Who knows?
Yeah, it's easier said than done.
I mean, if we beat PSG with the team that we currently have, that'll be one of the craziest things we've done in recent history.
Yeah, give Ollie manager of the year, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be absolutely disgusting. Johnson! Right, thanks for listening to another episode of Trafford Talk. Actually, join us in a couple of days for our reaction to the PSG game in the Champions League and our preview of Man United versus Arsenal in the Premier League, which, you know, obviously could be a big game for top four. Feel free to follow us on social media. Our Twitters will be in the description below. And if you're listening on iTunes, make sure to subscribe. Otherwise, you won't get the podcast as soon as it's available. Apple do take a while to update the store for new podcasts, unfortunately. Also, please leave a review and rate the podcast. It will really help us out. And, you know, I normally say see you next week, but see you in a couple of days.
Yeah, see you in a couple of days. Going on up to the spirit sky.